My friend Toby, a fine southern gentleman living in the chill of Boston, Massachusetts, used to celebrate the winter solstice every year. Well, not in some druidic way, but in the sure and certain knowledge that though January and February would be frigid, the days were getting longer and the summer was on its way. You're listening to the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. The college is happy to announce that just before the summer solstice, when the days are quite long indeed, we'll be having another session of the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought. Adults from across the country will gather here in Lander on Sunday, June 6th through Friday, June 11th, to discuss Shakespeare's Rome. We'll dig into three of Shakespeare's plays, Coriolanus, reflecting on the early years of the Roman Republic, and then Julius Caesar and Antony and Cleopatra, with the end of the Republic and the beginning of the Empire. What can we learn about Rome and Shakespeare's England, Rome and America, Rome and Christianity, honor, eros, and that most Roman of all virtues, piety? How can these plays inform our lives as individuals, as citizens, and as Catholic Christians? Wyoming Catholic College President Dr. Glenn Arbery will be one of the professors at the Wyoming School this year, and I asked him why the choice of topic, why Shakespeare's Rome?
Shakespeare had all these different places where he put his plays, and it's interesting when he puts them in the same place for a number of different plays. So the Roman plays of Shakespeare kind of give us a vision of Roman history, and they're very thoughtful. Political philosophers go to these Roman plays to find out all kinds of things about the way that Shakespeare thinks about politics. So they're quite a connected set of works, and I think they're interesting to study for that reason, not to mention the fact that they have some of the most gorgeous poetry in the language in them.
Well, we're going to be studying Coriolanus. Who was he and why was he important?
Coriolanus was a great warrior in the early Republican Rome, one of the patrician class, and he was dishonored by the city, but not until he had dishonored the city himself. He was so great in the wars that the other patricians wanted to make him consul, which was was the highest position in Rome. There were always two consuls every year. But in order to be consul, he had to go and show his scars to the people of Rome so that they would give him their voices. They would more or less vote him into the consulship. And he was unwilling to do that. He was too proud to show his scars to the people as though they had any right to stand in judgment of him in any way. So you see in this play in particular, this tension between the person of real excellence and the common people. It's very interesting to see how Shakespeare treats that. So I think that in itself would make it a very worthwhile play to read.
All right, and that was in the early days of the Republic that lasted nearly 500 years.
This was in fact the play that's about the institution of the tribunes, who are the representatives of the people. That's one of the things that's going on in Coriolanus. It's interesting in that regard also.
Well, during the Republic, even talking about a king was anathema. And yet, 500 years later, along comes Julius Caesar. Does Shakespeare think Brutus, Cassius, and the rest of the senators who killed him were patriots or traitors?
An excellent question. Friedrich Nietzsche weighs in on this. He says that Shakespeare never cast the slightest shadow of suspicion onto Brutus. Nietzsche thinks that Shakespeare's Brutus is pure patriot without any question about it. I think that Shakespeare casts considerable doubt onto Brutus. He obviously is interested in how his name will be remembered. He's his friend Cassius tempts him into this role by saying that this Brutus will be like the first Brutus, who was the one that overthrew the kings, the Tarquin kings to start with. So, it's hard to say exactly where Shakespeare comes down on this. Shakespeare lives in a monarchy. He's got lots of plays about kings, especially English kings. And yet here he is considering the rise of someone in Rome who is looking at kingship in a way that's completely illegitimate with respect to the Roman Republic. So, yeah, there are lots of ambiguities there, and I have a hard time saying myself exactly where Shakespeare comes down on this question.
Well, Nietzsche liked him, and obviously Dante didn't.
Dante puts Brutus and Cassius in two of the mouths of the 3 mouths of Satan in the very pit of hell. So, yeah, Dante's understanding was a little different.
Now, is Antony and Cleopatra political, or is it mostly a love story?
Well, it pits the love story against the politics, if I could put it that way. Antony can only express the depth and importance of his love for Cleopatra if he has the whole of Rome to lose, so to speak. He needs the whole political order and the possibility of it, of his being head of it to give, you know, if it's not something big enough to give up, then he can't really express the character of his eros. So the political figure in Antony and Cleopatra is Octavius, who later becomes Augustus Caesar. He is, in this play, a cold and very calculating man. I think that's probably true of what he was in life as well. But you see Antony sort of poised against Octavius, both in terms of who's going to have the power in the Roman Empire and in terms of their characters. And I think just on the personal level, you tend to prefer Antony's eros, you know, as bad as he is, to Octavius's calculation. But if it weren't for the politics of the play, you wouldn't be able to see the love story in the same way.
Now, Shakespeare obviously used a lot of sources for this. I mean, with the early Republic, I'm sure Livy and other things. And will we be looking at some of those sources as well in June?
I think we will definitely need to. I would say Livy less than Plutarch. Shakespeare loved Plutarch. He mined Plutarch. You can find whole passages that are kind of rewritings of the translations of Plutarch that were available to him. So, yeah, I think reading some of those passages is definitely going to be part of what we do.
Why did Shakespeare write these Roman plays? Was he commenting on the politics of England, or was it just, well, here's an idea, I bet people will pay to see this?
That's also a great question. He's certainly bringing Republican ideas before the audience of a monarchy. Machiavelli and others had popularized or made more plausible some kind of return to Republican ideas in modern Europe. So this gives Shakespeare an opportunity to think through that, you know, think through what a Republican regime looks like, what the tensions are, what kind of person tends to rise to the top. What do you do if you have a Caesar who's so capable, you know, who has such vision for what he thinks Rome ought to be, when this person comes in conflict with the tradition of the Republican order? Suppose it's time for a king. You know, what do you do then? Or suppose you have a traditional kingship and maybe it's time to start thinking in more Republican ways. It's interesting. Within the 17th century, within 50 years of when Shakespeare wrote Antony and Cleopatra, Oliver Cromwell, you know, has the Commonwealth. They overthrow the King of England and have this, 10-year or so experiment with a kind of Republican government. And then go back to the monarchy, but never quite on the same basis as it was before. So a lot of interesting things to pursue here.
I would ask you how this all relates to the United States today, but I think we'll save that for June.
I think that's a good idea.
Tell us your overall impression of the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought. Why do you enjoy it?
I love it because we get very intelligent and interested adults who long for good conversations to come in and participate in these investigation of great works, and this opportunity to have conversations not just in the classes but over meals and afterwards have trips. I mean, it's just a delightful time.
Now, who might want to attend?
Well, I could name you all, but people who long for the real intellectual life and usually don't have a chance to have the leisure to do this. So just to have a week to do nothing but read great books and talk about them, I think those who want to do that know who they are, and it makes you have a particular kind of jealousy almost, for students who get to do this for 4 years. You forget what kind of freedom that was. They forget what kind of freedom that is. Yeah.
Well, as director of distance learning, it's been my motto right along, why should our students have all the fun?
That's right, yeah.
What do you hope people will take home from the week?
From this week, I think several things. One, how perennially relevant Rome is. Rome has, in its 1,000-year history, more or less, works through most of the issues of human political order. That's one thing. The other is the greatness of the figures we're going to encounter, the greatness of the poetry that Shakespeare writes about Rome. But also, I think everybody will take home a sense of why it's so valuable to be able to have this kind of discussion and to think on this level with others who have like-minded interest.
Anything else you'd want to say?
Please come.
This June 6th through 11th in Lander will mean warm days, cool nights, fascinating lectures and seminars, rich conversations, new friendships, delightful meals, a strong sense of community, and spiritual growth. Tuition for the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought is $750 per person with some scholarships available. That tuition includes all sessions, meals, receptions, activities, books, and study materials. Lodging is an additional expense at one of our local hotels, campgrounds, or college dorms. For more information or to register, visit the college website, wyomingcatholic.edu. Wishing you a very happy new year. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.